Hey everybody, this is the last of the archives of the Pop Culture Talk Zones. This one is a follow-up of our last one of Capitalism Took My Baby Away, Send Help, that we talk about at the end of that one. And this one is called Copyright Copy Wrong, about copyrights. This was a discussion headed up by Bento. So enjoy the episode, but wait! Notes from producer Brad.
Yeah, some interesting things about this one. So the previous three that we've released, I had all of the raw files and I've remastered them to make them sound, you know, better. I think I did a fairly good job of that. This one, we can't actually find the raw footage or files of.
Even though it's the last one that we made, yeah. Which would make it the most likely to have the raw footage, or the raw stuff, so it's very strange.
Not sure where all those went.
Yeah.
So this one's more of a re-release than a remaster,
yeah.
As the previous ones are. However, I did listen to it a while ago, and it does sound pretty good. So
you were fine in your groove, yeah. By that point. So
there's going to be
innately.
There's going to be a little bit of stuff that I do to it, but for the most part, it's going to be as it was when it was originally released. Another thing to note, especially right away, we start talking about how we're recording a video for it and that we were going to release the video and so people could watch the podcast as well as listen to it. And yeah, that never happened.
No, that's fine by me.
And I have no idea where those videos are. So.
That's also fine.
But I think it was a pretty good episode, so I hope everybody
yes,
enjoys
enjoy
it.
The final Pop Culture Talk Zone of the archives. Copyright, copy wrong.
Oh, and if you like Pop Culture Talk Zone, please let us know. We've been thinking about doing some more of those episodes, so yep. If you
a
enjoy
special
them,
edition every now and then.
Yeah, let us know, and maybe we'll get to it sooner rather than later.
It's the Kermit Zone with our very special guest star, you, the listener! Yay! It's time to fetch your headphones. It's time to check the mics. It's time to chat pop culture on the Kermit Zone tonight.
It's time now for a shake-up. It's time to go sit tight. It's time to start recording on the Kermit Zone tonight.
Why do we always come here?
I guess we'll never know.
It's like a kind of torture
to have to tape the show. So now let's get things started.
Why don't you get things started?
It's time to get things started on the most sensational, conversational, observational, confrontational. This is what we call the Kermit Zone!
Welcome, everybody. We're back with another episode of Pop Culture Talk Zone. It's me, hi me. It's Kermit the Grog. We're trying something a little different this week. Now, I know we come out as an audio podcast, and we will still do that if you're listening in audio format. But this week, to test some technology we have, we also have a crazy video version, which if you can see the wide shot, which I'll toss up now, is such a tangle of wires, and we've got like camera boom arms now and light rings, and it's a mess. And I really hope Brad's face isn't obscured, because I'm not getting out of this seat until we are done. But yes, hello, it's me, Kermit Grog the back, and as you can see or cannot see, I've got Weeb Club with me. So to my left, it's Brad, it's Professor Isekai-sensei-sama.
Hello.
Gosh, I know we need to can't keep playing to the mic cameras. And to my right, we've got Ben.
Hey, I'm intimidated to be on camera.
Oh my gosh, this is like, I like the air. Now we're all on camera, everybody's a lot more nervous.
I'm not nervous at all.
I'm feeling it a little bit more now.
This is so much, I am so happy. I wanted to do this last week.
So, speaking of last week, or last time, our last podcast ended on a bit of a cliffhanger, which was the general mission statement was me processing how I can enjoy the things that I can enjoy when they're controlled by giant corporate entities. At the very end, good pal Ben had suggested the idea of copyright. And we're like, this is a good topic. We're out of time. Excuse me. Let's pick that up next time, because I feel like that's a good source of, you know, kind of continuing this conversation, but blossoming into something new. So, Ben, I will give you the floor to make your statement about copyrights.
So where we ended last time, we were talking about particularly the SpongeBob thing, where Nickelodeon is going to make a new SpongeBob cartoon that the creator didn't approve of. And if Nickelodeon didn't own that, they wouldn't be able to do that. And that's where I started thinking about copyright, because after an author dies, it kind of can either, it either goes into the public domain or it's inherited by whoever the author left it to or whoever he sold it to. And so I'm not particularly interested in the idea of like U.S. copyright law per se. I'm more interested in the idea of intellectual property, which is a relatively new idea, and its transferability. Should an author, my personal take on this is copyright should kind of persist throughout the author's life, but then when the author dies, I think things should just go into the public domain and anybody should be able to make a SpongeBob cartoon.
Have I got some thoughts on this? Okay. I tell you what.
Take the floor, Brett. I've got my own thoughts.
As we established the last time, you know, I have some rather left-leaning views. Can we do this?
You just want an excuse.
I'm glad that made it onto the soundboard.
Yeah?
Yeah. You do the joke once, it's a big hit, and you just want to keep going back to the well. I don't blame you.
But, you know, it's a really interesting topic, and I think especially because you brought up the difference between a copyright versus an intellectual property. You know, there's this thought that I have where intellectual property is, and maybe we actually need to sort of define these before we get too far into it. Do you have like a more dictionary definition?
Basically, the definition of intellectual property to me is ownership of an intangible idea. So it could be a character, SpongeBob. It could be a patent or a recipe. Anything that sort of before the dawn of like corporate law and universal literacy and media and all that, we weren't as concerned with who owned an idea. Ideas just passed from mind to mind and transformed, and we didn't think much of it. Nobody,
memes.
Yeah.
And like, and when I say memes, I mean like literally the
Richard Dawkins memetic.
Yeah, the actual scientific definition of meme. They didn't just come around when the internet happened. It's just that sort of the spread of ideas.
And then copyright is more the work itself.
Copyright to me is the specific laws a country chooses to apply to protect or not protect intellectual property.
Okay. In my mind, I sort of need to separate the two ideas apart, of one being the idea of the thing itself. And I think of that as intellectual property. So like Steven Hillenburg came up with the idea of SpongeBob SquarePants. Mm-hmm. But then the other side of that is the medium in which that appears. So Nickelodeon funded and hired and had made the SpongeBob cartoon, at least past the pilot or whatever. And I think that distinction is important because I feel like a intellectual property holder, in this case, Steven Hillenburg, should have legal right and probably monetary compensation throughout their life for the intellectual property that they have created.
Yeah.
Whereas the thing itself, say the SpongeBob cartoon that Nickelodeon produced, they own that. They need to give him a piece of that no matter where it's used. But
it's just the show. They can't make something new of it.
Well, so I have my own.
Not necessarily.
Okay, because yeah, I've got counterpoints for that then.
My own little idea about copyright is that ownership of the SpongeBob SquarePants character would just become public domain on Steven Hillenburg's death. Before his death, in my preferred implementation of copyright, Hillenburg would be able to license it, sell it if he wanted to, but either way, when he dies, it enters the public domain. Now, you can make a SpongeBob cartoon, say after it's in the public domain, and that cartoon belongs to you. People can't make unauthorized copies of that cartoon, but somebody else can go make a different SpongeBob cartoon. You don't have the exclusive right to produce SpongeBob SquarePants anything.
That doesn't stop the corporate engine. If anything, it's more, any corporate engine can now pick this up and do right. The thing. That was our topic from last time. It was that he had specifically asked, hey, don't make this specific spinoff of like them as kids yeah. or whatever. And then he had passed, and that was where the issue was. And I feel like that going to public domain just opens it up to every corporation can now mine the corpses of these things. At least I don't even know if it's better or not. I'm now currently grappling with the ideas that you've just presented me now, that it's that at least I don't know if it's a better that it's siloed into one corporation instead of it being trying to be taken over by all corporations.
I would say the difference is this would give you and other true SpongeBob fans the opportunity to crowdfund your own spiritual successor to SpongeBob.
And I mean, I think that's happened if you look at YouTube and all the stuff that's come out of it and the memes that have exploded
legally
from it.
And profit from it.
True.
And I think we're probably going to disagree on this because, I think Ben, your interpretation of, you know, life of the author and then going to the public domain and everything, I feel like that's a pretty reasonable take on things. And I think it is, you know, easily implemented in our current reality. My more,
you wouldn't even give it
leaning
life of the author
is that, while a intellectual property holder, you know, the creator of that work will always hold rights to that until their death, it shouldn't stop other people from making things using it. Now, whether or not a giant corporation can make something and make money off of it, I probably disagree with that. But I feel like while Steven Hillenburg is alive, people should be able to put out SpongeBob cartoons that they made if they're not making money off of it.
I mean, I think that's already a thing. Again, I point to YouTube and all the things that have
come
up from there.
It's sort of like the fair use kind of
thing. Well, yeah. I'm saying you can make all the fan fiction you want. You can't profit from it.
Right.
In my model, after he dies, you could profit from it. In your model,
oh, I see.
You could profit from it right away. Now, there is another sort of pro-author argument against my personal preferred model, and that is something like George Lucas selling Star Wars for, what, $2 billion or something? Star Wars is not going to be worth $2 billion if it enters the public domain upon his death. Mm-hmm. So I am probably taking money out of the hands of some artists, but I think it would be better for creativity as a whole, because I think we've talked about fan fiction and canon and all these things. Some fan fiction is better. And some people inherit properties like Nickelodeon. I have others in mind, but some people inherit properties that they really have no business running. They don't understand them and they just run them into the ground, whereas somebody could do something better with it. And I think the reason I brought it up at the end is I do think it doesn't solve the problem of SpongeBob being sacred and honoring the creator's intentions, but I don't think it ever was sacred. And I think this reflects that reality more than our current corporate culture.
I'm being fed my medicine and it is bitter, but it is important to take.
There is something to be said there about how media affects us as individuals and as groups, and what we take away from that, how we feel about that, how our lives are affected by that. And so I don't think it's necessarily bad to sort of hold that idea of like, hey, this person who I really admired, who made this thing that I love, is being disrespected. Like, I think that's a perfectly valid opinion. The difference is in like, how do we interpret that in law? How does that look on the landscape of media as a whole?
I mean, morality has never been a major shaper of law, especially in this regard. I think we can all very easily and quickly agree on that.
I think the purpose of intellectual property was to give artists more of a chance to make money from their ideas before a giant corporation could come and make a billion copies of your idea before you could even get one published.
Okay, here's a counterpoint example. So artist creates thing. Company comes along, buys thing, makes bigger thing. Bigger thing is the thing that that thing is known for now. How does that work? Key example I can think of is like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There was a comic. Nobody talks about it. Everybody talks about the cartoon and the toys that came out from that. So the creator created the turtles, but they didn't create that.
I'd like to talk about it.
Whose is it? Is it the artist? Does the artist of the original comic, is he the one that gets the rights? Or is it the people that then worked on the show?
And see, that's what I'm...
The thing that blew up.
The idea of the author owns the intellectual property. So unless the author would like fully sell his rights away, and that gets into like, you know, how do we make sure they're not being tricked and all that kind of stuff. So that's a little murky, but like, assuming they don't completely sell their intellectual property, I feel like they should always have some stake in anything that gets made during their lifetime. So the creator of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, he makes the comic and I forget who picked it up, but they pick it up and they're like, hey, this is great. We're going to not make it violent and it's going to be for kids now. And he's like, he should get some of the money.
Well, that's not very...
from all of that.
That's marginally Soviet of you. It's not really the people's turtles then.
Well, so that's where it comes in with like...
Well, should he just get nothing?
I feel...
If you're saying anybody can do it, it means that... I feel like that instantly goes against the creator.
That's why my preferred is existing copyright pretty much as it is for the life of the author.
Okay.
But that's the thing. So what would happen at that point is if a company came along and was like, just made some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stuff, didn't talk to him at all, he should have the legal right to go to court, assuming they make money off of it. Because that's where this stands. Like, I feel like anybody should be able to make the cartoon if they want to, but if they make a ton of money, he is owed a piece of that.
Well, let's move one step down the chain now. So you have original creator creating the comics, and then you have the boom in the 80s and the 90s. Now, those people who made the boom put in effort, created characters in this universe that people connect to. I don't know why I'm talking about Teenage Mutant Turtles. I don't even like the turtles, but it was...
What you just said. They
so now when the next time comes around, do you circumvent, do you keep going back to the comics now, or do you go to the people who made the show for the first boom? Do they not deserve a Do they have not any ownership over it? Is it only the initiator?
Did the original author make the character that's being used?
I'm not saying that they aren't a part of it. I'm saying, is it every time you add a new link to the chain that's meaningful, does everybody get a part of it?
Yes.
Okay, so what, I guess my other...
I'll play the anthem again.
What?
Well, I would say, in my model, now this would all happen after the author died, but if you create, in your model, I would think, the guy who creates the turtles gets money when the turtles are used.
Yes.
If you create, I don't know, Krang or whatever. I don't know if he was in the comics, but if you created Krang and you want to make a Krang spinoff that doesn't have any of the original characters in it, that's yours.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that would definitely be a tricky area. That would be a more gray area because then you get into like, is... it's still in the same universe because the original author created that universe. Are there identifiable characteristics of that universe that now the Krang spinoff is in? So like, are there parts of that? Obviously, once something's created and other people add characters to it, that's a little bit more cut and dry because that's the character. Like they created that character, not the whole universe, you know?
And so I think at this point, I would say, let's pause and ask the simple, like, sort of first principles question. Is intellectual property, as a protected entity that you can own, a good idea for society?
I think if you make something, it should be yours. I think it's the same idea, like you had said, of like a patent. It's I invented this thing, but in this case, instead of it being like an engineering thing, it's like a creative work.
And so I agree, and that's why I have my preferred implementation of copyright. But I only agree up to a point, in that I want to encourage people to make stuff and I want them to be able to make a living on it. But after they're gone, I don't really care what their thoughts on it were. See, I mean, from a legal perspective, I may personally care, okay, but
I think it's my thoughts on this run parallel to my thoughts on engineering. You know, somebody makes a machine that is good for humanity. Other people should be able to make that thing. It should be able to be spread. That person should get credit. They should get some of the money from it, whatever that is. But like, this idea that you can make something and then no one else can make it for, you know, 50 years or
but
whatever.
It's not even, like even a if it's medicine insulin or something.
Yeah.
In this case, it's a creative idea. And in this case, we're doing a lot of cartoon characters because that's where my brain is. And just, I mean, that's, again, pop culture talk zone. That's kind of the bit here. And despite the last episode, here is Kermit vaguely arguing on the fact of the behalf of the corporations because my brain's broken. Let's curveball into where we've been wanting to go here because it's the big one. Let's talk about Mickey. Creator's been dead for ages.
Creator made his bones using stuff in the public domain.
Creator, yes, I know. Very aware. I mean, I can go from multiple directions from Disney. Again, as I literally last time lambasted them a lot and said they did a lot of things I didn't like. Here is things where I go, well, what about this? What about that? So, creator, Walt Disney creates Mickey. Walt Disney creates the entire, you know, creates the corporation. Walt dies. Do you not think that it goes to the corporation, who then use it as, like, a mascot? Like, he is the face of the company. Do you just go one day, you just go, and now it's everybody's?
But that's what I'm saying, is that it's everybody's from the start. The minute he creates Mickey, anybody can use it for anything. But he's the only one who can make a significant amount of money off of it.
Yeah. And are we saying that's a good path or a bad path?
I mean, I think it's a good path. I imagine, I don't know if either of you guys fall into this camp, but I imagine that the corporate counter argument to that is that, you know, we put a lot of work into this. If other people are making money off of it, then it dilutes our property.
I will present it to you because this argument was already into me, is that if you go, this is the face of my company that I've spent a lot of time working on, getting out there, putting on things and developing. If I just see random Joe Schmoes making lesser versions of it and people see it out in the wild and don't know the difference, then they go, oh, the quality of the things you make is poor. It's like knockoffs. And I feel like to an extent that's why that's important, to be able to go, hey, this is close enough to trick people, but doesn't, you know, represent, again, this is, I have to assume in this case that the corporation is trying to make good things, obviously. If you listen to the last episode, I'm obviously, you know, I have a lot of trouble in myself of accepting some of those things, but under this thought experiment is that, hey, I make thing, I put a lot of work into thing, if other person makes thing that looks like my thing, it can, you know, muddy the water, you know, the quality level or something. It can look like junk. It can look like you can make a thing that's really popular for children and then something very adult can come out of it. And you're like, you don't want that out and about as much.
Not to split hairs, but there's a difference between trademark and copyright.
Okay, lay it on me because I don't know that and clearly you do.
If you're ever trying to pass off like a knockoff Gucci bag or something, and you put the word Gucci on it, you violated their trademark. You tried to trick people into thinking Gucci made that. It's different from making another bag that looks similar.
But what is it to make another Mickey? What does that mean?
I mean, I think that would fall under a similar premise. I was thinking, you know, what word would you use for that? Informed consumption or something like that.
You wouldn't be allowed to say you're Disney.
Right. And they wouldn't be able to say, you know, I mean, it's Mickey Mouse. That's the character. You're using it in fair use. So it is Mickey Mouse. But, you know, there needs to be something where it's like, this is not an original work of the creator. And, you know, maybe so Walt Disney, he draws Mickey and says, hey, Disney as a company, well, also, you have the ability to say this is an original work of mine because we have that agreement. But nobody else can do that. And so when that other Mickey cartoon comes out that Nickelodeon makes, it has to be clear, this is Nickelodeon Mickey Mouse, you know?
How do you make that clear, though?
I don't know.
Well, so let me ask you this, and there's no right or wrong answer. It's just kind of a value judgment. Do you think Mickey should ever enter the public domain?
50 years ago.
But is there ever a time like when it would be right?
No. It's like, that's why, I mean, again, this is where I'm the counterpoint to you two, which I think is interesting, especially with how I felt in the last episode. But it's a, yeah, I can see it from a point of myself of just a, this thing's, you know, it has been spent many decades building this thing up as the icon, and to have it just randomly just go, okay, now it's gone, or everybody can make this, and just the entire stuff gets like muddied up legally. Like, I don't think that's cool.
See, I think of it more in terms of, and I guess this is a utilitarian approach, because I think about it in terms of an invention, a mechanical invention, electronic, whatever it is, where I go, if somebody makes something that's revolutionary, I mean, that's great. This is a revolutionary thing, but I want other people to come and make it better. You know, I don't want the single inventor to be like, I'm going to hold on to this for 50 years or whatever, and no progress can be made. I'm a progressive. I want things to progress.
And it does.
So if someone can come along and make a Mickey Mouse cartoon that's better than Disney's,
Disney, I want them to do that. They're better than the originals.
Disney did.
Yeah.
But what if Nickelodeon makes a Mickey Mouse cartoon and it's better?
Because now you're just gambling on the, because it's like, creative works aren't like engineering. You can't go like, I sped this up. I made this costless. I made this more durable. The ability to measure something being better is so much more complicated. And especially like we kind of joked at the beginning, like this is not saving a life. This is not making life easier in some specifically tangible way than this is a thing that makes me smile and I like it and it makes it easier to get through my days. And, you know, in certain other cases, like taking on new ideas and whatnot. So I think certain things line up with that and certain things don't. Okay, here's my maybe a little bit more in your guys' space thing, is that I think if you're using it, I mean, maybe this is even just generally copyright law, and this is where the gross stuff comes in. It's like, if you're using it consistently, it's yours. But if you're just sitting on doing nothing with it, then I think it's up for grabs. Mickey's being constantly used. He is the figurehead. They make new shows with him. Like, money and effort and time and people's thoughts are being put into that. It's being still used.
The thing is, I think,
but other things in the giant Disney umbrella that they have bought that they're just sitting on because they eat all these smaller companies. So then their smaller companies, smaller things that they own, are even that much more infinitesimally small to Disney. So they just sit and nothing happens. That's when I go, hey, if you're not doing with this over X amount of years, it's up for grabs again, which is how you get those terrible Fantastic Four movies.
I think you're thinking about that from the perspective of a company creating something, whereas like an individual artist might not be able to create something for many years because of however many myriad of reasons. And so that doesn't take the individual artist into account.
Well, about it not being used?
Yeah.
Then the artist, if the artist isn't using it, if it's not making money on anything, if it's just sitting dormant.
But that's what if they're not able to use it.
If they own it, I want them to own it. I'm not saying they shouldn't own it. I'm saying if they own it and it's sitting for long enough and nothing's happening with it. I mean, maybe, again, we're also talking, the thing I'm also arguing from is that the creator is dead or gone, and now it's just the company owns it.
Well, and like I said, there's no right or wrong answer at this point. We have a different value system on that.
Correct. Which is what I'm hoping makes this conversation interesting. Yeah, we have different viewpoints.
And I would say, from where I'm coming from, I don't think you can kind of ignore the hypocrisy of Disney thinking that way, having based so much of their stuff on public domain work. Now, they transformed it and put it in the new medium of animation, but they kind of relied on these being characters and stories that everybody had some familiarity with to boost initial interest. And I don't know why we would deny, like, Disney got to use the stories of his childhood to build his art on, and now we can't use the stories of our childhood because Disney heirs and company appointees who have never touched pencil to paper to draw a figure own the character.
You make a good point. And all of this, I have a counterpoint, but it still comes back to those people can't really make money on it. Because again, I go look at the internet and see all of the things that people grew up with and how they have mutated into things. Look at Shrek for a split second on the internet and you will see an incredible...
I'll see things I don't want to see.
Weird, like, bacteria colony of just incredible mutations that come out of it. I don't remember what the exact term for it. People have remade, collectively, the entire Shrek movie. And now they're planning on the sequel.
Oh, and I've seen...
It's insane.
I've seen, because this is Anime Club, I've seen the SpongeBob anime that somebody made. And... it's amazing.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It's pretty
crazy. So I guess
crazy.
It's the idea it's that these people should be able to make money off of this and not just get cease and desisted.
Just a quick aside, have you guys seen, and I'm going to plug this, did you guys see Bo Burnham Inside?
I don't like Bo Burnham.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, well, at the very
he
least...
He makes me feel uncomfortable, but he gives me no answers and I don't like messing with him. But I know he does a lot for other people, so...
His one song from Inside, Welcome to the Internet, is... a masterpiece. Go watch it immediately. Pause this video. Go watch that one. Come back.
Subscribe to Netflix, I guess. Or it's probably on YouTube.
Oh, it's on YouTube for free.
YouTube. Yeah. There you go.
Just to say, like, his point there in that the internet is insane. The amount of content, the wide range of things, incomprehensible. A single human mind does not have the capacity to comprehend the amount of things on the internet. So this idea that we have
of
like someone has a thing that they've made and they're going to make something with it and no one else can. It doesn't exist today. There is nothing that exists that a company has made that has not been recreated in some way by some random person on the internet.
Well, and that's kind of where I was getting at with the difference between copyright and intellectual property, because intellectual property is not real. You don't own it. You can't hold it. You can't stop somebody from making another one.
What does it mean? What does it mean to create something? Is it the artist that drew the picture? Is it the writer that hatched the idea of the character? Is it the voice actor that brings the actor that brings the character to life? Who of those three people created that character?
And so it's how much do we as a society want to put into protecting this concept that we made up? And like I said, we're all going to draw the specific implementation of copyright differently. I have my preference, and I know there's legitimate arguments against it.
Here, Ben, I think something that I've understood now talking about this to both of you now is I feel like I'm approaching it from... I'm imagining myself as the corporation going, I've created something, I want control over it. I am also not a giant corporation. I do not act or think like a giant corporation. And I have committed the grand faux pas that we have talked about last time of do not put human values on a corporation. Speaking of other things you should watch, the Tuca and Birdie season 2 on Adult Swim had one of the most infuriating things of a corporation is that their neighborhood starts gentrifying from this mold, just green mold. And there's this woman who is the spokesperson of mold, and it's like, oh, the mold feels this or that. If the mold could feel, the mold feels nothing. It just occupies space. And I feel like that's the thing of corporations. It's like, this is a giant unfeeling, this is a giant unfeeling machine. There could be people in it that think and feel about things, but as a collective, it's not a person. It doesn't feel things. It can't be sad something is gone. It is the machine. And I guess that's my problem is approaching it like if I made something, I would want to have it. And I wouldn't want other people to make crummy knockoff versions to think. I don't want anybody making a bootleg knockoff version of Kermit's Pop Culture Talk Zone, gosh dang it.
Well, and...
you know, it's like badly recorded and somebody finds out, like, I thought that was your podcast. I'm like, no.
Well, and I understand, and there is... there is something to what you're saying of should an artist...
But that's the people, like, that's the whole thing, is that's the person level. Obviously, I present a lot of things of who or what the creator is sometimes hard to nail down, but...
Well, it's like this. So there would be a problem in my version of copyright where, say, you know, my hero J.R.R. Tolkien has died. Now anyone can make a Lord of the Rings thing because that's how I wrote the law. J.R.R. Tolkien left some work unfinished and he designated his son Christopher Tolkien to be the one to finish it. But 6 million people are trying to finish it. Personally, because of my values and my relationship with the material, I'm going to seek out the designated successor. And so I don't think anybody should ever be able to say, I'm Christopher Tolkien and I made it. I'm Christopher Tolkien and I made it. You should still have
some, I'm Spartacus.
Yeah, you should still have some level of trademark. You should have to say where it came from.
Yeah.
Like, none of you are J.R.R. Tolkien and you don't have the right to use his name to produce your stuff. But there would be 6 million knockoffs and I would still seek out the one from his designated successor. I don't think it would do Disney significant harm if Mickey fell into the public domain, because I think a lot of people are still going to value the designated inheritors of Mickey. Like, it was Walt Disney's will that his corporation continue to make these cartoons.
So there's still, just by virtue of there is the designated holder as a human being, that it's just everything exists. Everybody can make it. But this is the, oh my gosh, are we coming back to canon?
Yeah. I mean,
to an extent, yeah.
It's just
everything's connected.
Everything, it's the everything is canon, but this one's more canon than other canons.
Yeah.
That's a fun discovery. I like that.
You know, as you mentioned about like the difference between a corporation doing something versus an individual artist, that's sort of where I come from specifically, because I want the person who came up with a thing to be able to profit from that thing. Whereas, I mean, sort of as it exists today, you can come up with an idea and you can sell that idea to a company for $500 because it's like, whatever. I just made this thing up. And then they take it and make hundreds of millions of dollars off of it and you get nothing because you sold your rights to them. And that's what I want to stop. I want the individual. I don't want corporations necessarily, I sort of do, to not be able to make money anymore. Like, those machines should exist to be able to make things that are hard to make.
Yes.
But I don't want those corporations, those big companies, to eat individuals, you know?
Okay. Let me present an example that's been brewing my head that I think we've actually talked about. Present The Witcher. Witcher book series in somewhere in Europe, Eastern Europe, probably Poland. Eastern Europe, Poland. Fairly popular. Hmm. Company, CD Projekt. I looked to Ben. I guess we had this conversation. Yeah, specifically. You're the book man.
I mean, CD, I say it is pronounced Projekt Red, but
whatever their deal is. Goes to creator, author, and goes, hey, we want to make Witcher game. We think your books are cool. And he goes, ha ha! Video game garbage. I don't know why he sounds like that.
He does kind of sound like that.
I've never heard him. But the way that I'd heard the story told was that he was like, this is stupid. And I guess they lobbied for it and he like threw it away for a pittance because he didn't think any of it. He's this old man. He doesn't know what video games are.
He had two options. He could take a flat fee up front or he could take a stake in the sales. And he took the flat fee up front.
And he had the option.
And that's what I want to eliminate. That's what I want to not exist anymore. Like the option that they gave him,
he has to get a stake.
The option that they gave him of you can have a stake in this, in at which point you'll get profit, or we can just give you $5,000 right now. When he takes either one of those options, let's say he takes the option that he did take, which is the flat fee up front,
because he assumed that it was going to flop, because he thought video games were dumb, and then he was wrong. He took a wrong gamble because it was the idea is that he would have gotten, if it would have flopped, he would have gotten more getting the flat fee than investing. And that's where that option is. It's like, hey, we're giving you a way that you can go, hey, if you think this is going to be garbage and it's not going to go anywhere, here is more money than you would make if there was a stake. Because if this thing crashes, your stake is worthless.
In my utopia,
you get both?
Not necessarily. So the right that he's selling is the right to make a thing with this thing that I have.
Correct.
So when they go and they make tons and tons of money.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen is they were legally in the right to be able to do that, to make lots of money off of it. But as soon as they hit a point where this is wildly successful and he spent his $5,000, like,
well,
that was not a reasonable.
Well, no, because he was the one that said, F off, I'm going to take this. I guess you can have it.
But it's just like you said,
failing.
He's a dumb old man.
Yeah, and
he didn't understand.
That's on him.
No, no.
Well,
okay. That is on him.
That's what I'm saying is.
I don't have sympathy for somebody who's going to go, bah.
A human being does not have perfect knowledge.
Exactly.
So
and he made a bad choice.
Well, there's a third choice he could have made, and that was, no, you can't use it.
Also true.
Which is the choice you would take away from him if well, it was socialized.
That's true. However, if then they just go and make their Witcher game,
they would still have
without
to pay
talking.
Him.
Yeah, they still have to pay him for it.
There is a he is not being stolen from him. They presented the deal. They gave two options. He chose the one option under the assumption that this was going to crash. I will make more money and value from this than the other option. And that's how it played out.
Sort of what I'm getting to is forced donation.
Yeah, like, the Witcher belongs to the people, but because the creator is still alive, you need to pay him the tax.
So basically, you know,
troll toll.
It's like, so the perfect world where we don't have to have laws and everybody just does what's good for everybody else, they go and they make that video game. They make a ton of money off of it. And they go, hey, we made a ton of money off of this. We should take care of this guy because he invented it. And they just give him some of that money. So basically what I'm getting at is you have to have a law that says you have to be nice to people.
Even if they're jerks.
Well, so this is my... This is my have my cake and eat it too thing where I'm like directly between you and Andrew or between you and Kermit. I think he should still be able to say no while he's alive. I would say I'm alive. I'm still making my work. I don't want, this is, and again, it's my own personal preference. I think if you write Fellowship of the Ring and then you're still alive writing the Two Towers and somebody else comes out and writes the Two Towers, that's going to really interfere.
Well, in the utopia in my head, the person who comes along and makes the Witcher game without talking to him at all is not able to keep their profit because they were not.
Then how do they make it? What are they paying people with? What is this thought experiment built on nothing?
I did say profit. I did say profit.
Okay.
You do understand.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Profit versus revenue.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Sorry.
So
I synonym just to be words clear. Aren't synonyms. I apologize.
So basically it goes, you know, hey, we made this thing without getting permission from the IP holder for it. All of our profit goes to him.
Well, then nobody would make it.
Well,
yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
But isn't that the discouragement from ripping off somebody's intellectual property?
Well, so in the perfect world where everybody does the right thing.
Also, there's no thing as one right thing because everybody has a different sense of what's right.
My own personal morals, like different from my legal preferences, my legal preferences have baked in. This is the compromise that I think balances the way I want it to balance. But I don't really think Nickelodeon should be making the SpongeBob thing they made.
Well,
like I would still ask him. It's still right to ask him.
I think I've been pretty clear on this when I keep saying utopia. I don't think that my ideas are realistic. This is just like...
That's why it's a fun thought experiment to whittle away the hours.
The grand scheme of my thoughts is legislating people being good to each other. Yeah. Which, again, like, I mean,
good.
You can't really do that.
I
said at the beginning, I think you are being very realistic about it. I think those ideas, you know, having fair use to, you know, those concepts fit within the world that we have right now. So... Obviously take all of my ideas when I'm talking about utopias here with a block of salt. So
I do, but the conversation I'm the parts of this I'm most interested in are just sort of where do you morally feel on that? Like to what extent does somebody own this unownable thing? this practically unownable thing.
This yeah. idea.
And I have these beliefs about it, and I think this is what Kermit likes to get into on the pop culture talk zone is, why do I think they should ask him for permission? I don't really know, because that doesn't really jive, because once he's dead, I don't care. I don't really know why I've distinguished well, between that.
Doesn't because... it come down to like you as an, like if you put yourself in the shoes of an artist, you're like, if I create a thing, that's my thing. I made that. I want to be able to profit from that.
And if somebody else made something that I want to be a part of, I have to talk. Like, I think it's just nicety. It's yeah. the way that you go, hey, can I borrow, you know, thing of milk or something, or another, like an object. And I feel like that then extends to, again, we talked about intellectual property, a thing that isn't actually physically real. But it's, I think it follows our same line of thought on that, is you're not just going to go, this person made this thing, I want to make it. Admittedly, when you get digital, we get a little funky with that, because like, I know I've definitely used things that probably other people made without doing it, because I just want to throw things in a blender and make the thing that I want to make.
Your
and we get
song
a lot
again?
More complicated. yep. Covering my butt by saying things about it in the outro, which is not in all the episodes. And again, and then here, let's go into that. We've got some time.
Work.
Transformative works. The background music is taken. We're going to oust myself right now if I wasn't already ousted. Have you heard the opening theme to this?
Yeah.
Show.
You replayed that. The piano's right over there.
Well, and I think bootlegging is different yeah. from the conversation. Like, I'm not actually talking about pirating media.
Of course, that gets into like rappers using samples and stuff, which
that's its own kettle of fish. I'm not equipped for that.
But I'm talking about, you know, you call yourself Kermit the Grog.
Yes.
You couldn't call yourself Kermit the Frog.
No, and I wouldn't want to. That name's already taken.
Right. But I think Jim Henson's been gone long enough that I don't think it hurts him if somebody else made a Kermit the Frog thing. By that same token, you know, I'm not ready to, like, to what extent does the author...
How much is one of his kids have his hand on the wheel?
Right.
If this stuff is in one spot, there's a better chance of the kids' hands being on the wheel than not. I don't know if they are at all, admittedly, so that kind of muddies the situation.
Well,
but
it's like with real property, if you died, I wouldn't say just unlock the doors to your house, first come, first serve, for all your stuff.
I mean, we also don't really respect that kind of idea for the things that are in free use, because the people who made those have been dead for, like, ever.
Yeah.
So I don't think who wrote the original Sleeping Beauty or something, or like Robin Hood. It's like,
was that Hans Christian Andersen?
Well, but part of the reason you don't know is because that society had no concept of intellectual property.
Or keeping track of records or something. Like, well, also, even if they did, like, we are so far as humans living in the year we live in from the year and time that the, I'm assuming man, but maybe not, maybe that's me just being sexist, that wrote Robin Hood. And now every decade we get another crappy Robin Hood remake because he's in public domain and Hollywood just keeps trying and it's not actually good.
Well, I would say my core philosophy here is that intellectual property slows progress by force freezing ideas in place.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, I think we need that. But I think it has to unfreeze at some point.
I mean, there's always new people making new things. And then you get the, one of my points that I was going to make for all of this is that you get people who grew up with thing make better, more special thing. One of case in point, just to play the sound effect, My Little Pony, hit the button, do it.
Oh, are we going to go into the pony van?
Just for a moment, just cause to give us an excuse to play the sound. We're getting it live now, folks. Like that was the thing of the creator Lauren Faust growing up with the first one and going, this is how I played with my pony toys. Now I will make this show that was the way that I played with my toys back in the day. And you get this still within this corporate thing of Hasbro, you get this transformative work that makes it this bigger thing further along. And the other thing that came to mind before that one I was thinking of when you had said like a lockdown of creative ideas is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. As a big proponent of animation, is one of the most creatively, like, abundant things that I have seen in recent memory. And that is based on an intellectual property that's been around since, what, like, the 60s?
So maybe freeze.
I don't think it's... And there's also always people coming up with new ideas. Does it suck that, like, most of the movies that come out, at least in theaters, are based on things that already exist? I mean, yeah. But I don't know if you just free-for-all would fix that problem.
I'm going to go to Spider-Man as the example, because the evolution that Spider-Man has had since its inception in the 60s was driven specifically by the companies that owned it. There were individuals, but they were, you know, they worked within a company to say, here's this new iteration of Spider-Man. Like, can you think of any singular Spider-Man, you know, concept that came from the fan base?
I mean, it's collectively. Oh, here's a good example of, I mean, again, I feel like a lot of this comes back to canon, but instead of something being canon in a, like, a, this is part of the timeline, it's a canon in a sense of, like, this is the company that owns this says you're legit now, you're real, is Sonic Mania. Sonic Mania was essentially made by fans. Was it Christian Whitehead? I don't know, that name's in my brain. And basically, Sega was just like, yeah, this rules, here we go, Sonic Mania, make it. You've already shown all the progress that you're going to make a game that's better than we can make. And it became that. And I feel like,
what value does the gatekeeper add to it, though? Because
it gives it legitimacy. Now, just if it's a guy making it on the internet, the people who know about it on the internet play it. Now it is a thing that is physically in stores. I have it from freaking PSN. Like, other things are putting it in front of more people. That is the power of the machine. That's the power of the mandate.
Is
the ability to communicate it out further.
There's nobody
curtailing it. They're shouting it louder because it's now part of the machine.
I'm not convinced that this is not detrimental to the progress of the property, though. Like, there, you could potentially have 100 My Little Pony shows of the same quality that just didn't get approved by the machine.
I mean, who's making them? The machine is where the money is. These things are, like, I think that was the thing Brad touched on for a moment, was that there are certain things that you need a large machine to make. You can make smaller video games, but one or two people is not making The Witcher games.
Fair point, but
sometimes you need those larger groups, and I don't really know a way to do that without the rest of the ickiness, yet, admittedly. I would love to have a solution, but I don't.
Well, so I this is kind of contradictory. Either it's the machine is the only one capable of making the thing, or it would be harmful to the machine if everybody could make it.
But then everybody's making their own thing. They're all making small.
But the machine can still exist to make the big ones.
That's my point, is that all of it should be able to exist. Like, what the machine does is, because it's a large machine, it allows that work that comes out of the machine to be spread. You know, I'm sure that online somewhere, welcome to the internet, there exists a absolutely brilliant Spider-Man fan fiction that expands the universe and is well written and, like, does great things with the Spider-Man idea. I haven't read it.
Yep.
Because it's not put out by Sony or Marvel.
Haven't read it because Sony would sue them if they tried to market it.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. We can't really know how successful any of these things would be. We can't know with crowdfunding. Could you get a team to make a Witcher game?
Well, but that's what I'm getting at is, I'm sure it exists out there. It's on the internet. You can probably go read it right now. It's not popular. It's not talked about on the news. Because
they can't get around. It's like Ben said. That person can't make obscure money off of it.
Right.
So they can't put that extra effort to get it out further than the little corner it exists in. That is a good thought.
Well, and this is where I'm going on, I guess, play my capitalism music, Brad.
We don't have one of those.
Exactly.
We're just going to go into your...
Don't play that one.
No,
we'll come up with a sound to play under when he said it.
No, but I say let them compete. if they can make the best product, if CD Projekt Red can make the best Witcher game because they've got the best machine, then they'll do just fine.
I guess competition,
but that is
through creativity.
It is, yeah. But I'm saying, like, we don't need. I don't think we need a capitalist utopia for that, because, like, when most people think of Snow White, they're going to think of the Disney film. Nobody's going back to Grimm's Fairy Tales or anything like that. A few people do, but
I have an example that is specific to me. Here's another topic that I talk about a lot that probably needs a sound that I haven't done in a while. Pro wrestling. And I've been feeling this really heavily.
We don't have any sound for that ever.
No, I don't. Maybe I haven't talked pro wrestling with you guys.
Oh,
yet,
from the top rope.
The John Cena
bell.
Thing.
You do the bell ring. Yeah, the John Cena theme. Well, actually, that kind of plays into it. So, despite both of you not being wrestling fans, both of you know about WWE. It is the monolith. It is the monolith in pro wrestling. There hasn't been a big company until recently, which is my point, in like multiple decades in America that is anywhere near their size or their level, you know? And obviously when they're the main game in town and they have no reason to get any better, they have decayed a lot over the years and they're kind of awful. They do a lot of awful business practices. Now, recently, in the past about 2 years, this wonderful new company called AEW, All Elite Wrestling, started up that had, you know, a bankroller. They're on, like, actual, like, cable television and channels people know. And it's, like, it has gained a lot of steam and is now, like, recently this weekend that we're recording this, there was a big pay-per-view that, like, and a lot of people's eyes watching the industry, like, the tables have turned in that WWE was always the spot everybody, every aspiring wrestling said, that's where I want to go. And that has been the same for decades. We'll pretend wrestling is that copyright in this case. Again, this is kind of a different thing because that's not how wrestling works. And now there's finally this other company that it's like, no, the people who want to do wrestling at the peak, they come here and they can get paid well and, you know, proper stuff for their time and all that in that respect, then the monolith, the holder, metaphorically here, the owner of this copyright of pro wrestling. And because it's this open thing, not one person owns it, all these little versions can show up. Everybody can have their own little flavor, but you can have something else that grows to battle that, like Disney Snow White or something. But no, I feel like that's not necessarily copyright, but I feel like that's a point in
monopoly
in Ben's favor of when it gets spread out, new things can spring up that can overtake the old thing. It's whatever's best gets to win, quote unquote.
And that's my progressive stance of like, I want things that are better to, you know, be out there. I think things need to grow and progress.
I'm mainly with you. I think I would reserve a few more rights for the author while they're alive.
Oh, no, certainly. The author sells their intellectual property to big company A. Big company A puts out the thing. The author says, this is the thing that I wanted to make. I love this. Somebody else comes along and says, hey, I like that thing. Here, I made this thing. It's small, but it's way better and it takes off, right? And suddenly that thing is making money. You know, maybe it's not their intention that it was going to make money, but it just blew up. So it's making money now.
Yeah.
They are now obligated to give some of that to the intellectual property holder.
And again, I think that's a reasonable value. I would still give, while the author is alive, I'd still give them veto power.
What about when they pass it? Can they give it to their family? Does it stick around unless they say otherwise? How many generations of what, the Archie comics and the weird situation that's in now that I'm only vaguely aware of?
In my personal...
Or the Peanuts.
My personal value system.
Chipmunks.
When the author dies, it's over.
Maybe a percentage kind of thing would work better. Whereas like, so author, first generation of an idea, 100%. Like they die, their children, 50%. You know,
I just don't think.
So by now, what would Disney be at? Like 10%?
I have a somewhat strong and unpopular opinion as a book person.
Go for it.
On authors' children who find notes in the attic.
Hmm.
That is, I don't know how true it is every time, but there is a big thing of like somebody who had a parent who was a popular author and a kid who wanted to be an author finds notes in the attic, and well, they own the property by virtue of inheritance, and so they get to write, and their work is usually inferior because they're not much of a writer and they didn't make it on their own. And
I wonder who he's talking about.
You could probably guess
any number.
You could probably guess if you're listening to my podcast as it comes out. But
now, if they find the notes in the basement, is that okay?
No, because it's mildew. But no, like in my opinion, if the child helped the parent produce the work in some way, like my beloved Tolkien, Christopher Tolkien was the original beta reader of Lord of the Rings. He did contribute ideas. He drew the maps. there's some argument for that kid retaining some ownership. But if the only thing you have in to claim that work is your genetics, I don't think you're the proper inheritor of it.
I'm arguing from a point of they were sort of involved in the system. See Jim Henson and his son. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a rolling thing. He was a part of the company. He did some of the puppeteering, the performing, and the directing. It passes over to him in some regard. And then, because you said at some percentage, and then we just go, well, what's the percentage? It depends on this and this and this. And can you legally kind of break that down empirically? And you can't. And I feel like that we come back to this.
It would be tough. I do think in that case, there is something to say, like we talked about, anyone can make, say, a SpongeBob cartoon, but if you come up with new material, that material belongs to you.
Right.
So Jim Henson's son, if he contributed to the Kermit character or any of those particular characters, I would say it makes sense to transfer it to him then. Or that he should already have some of it while he's alive.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of on the track of, like, when Brian Herbert puts out a book, that needs to stand on its own.
You just outed it.
Like,
who is this author? I think I'm knowing. I had a feeling, but I wanted to make sure it confirmed for myself and the listeners.
I think the problem is that he is going, hey, this is what my dad wanted, which is probably a lie. Like, that's the problem. The
but
lie
you don't
is
know that.
Well, like, who cares?
You're arguing in this particular
right.
situation.
Yeah. But, like,
you've got information. But
who cares if he puts out a book? Like, go for it. And even if it's in the same universe, even if it's a continuation of the story, like, you go for that. But do not try and say this was from someone else.
Yeah, this is and that's my thing. I think he should be able to make his books, and I think he does have, say if I wrote another Dune sequel, because I have disagreements about what
I'm
I think
sure
the canon
you
was.
Could
but I think Brian Herbert can always argue, I knew my dad better than most. I knew my dad better than anyone except my mom. That's true, and I think that lends credibility to his claim, and I think his books are always going to do well because of that. I don't think he needs this lockdown on the copyright to make his stuff.
Well, right, and because even if he didn't say, hey, my dad sort of wrote this, and then I'm just putting it together, like, just the fact that he is the son of the person who wrote Dune, when he puts out his Dune book, people are going to buy it and read it.
Exactly.
Just, I mean, it's good. Just means it's got some
it's objectively not
big on quotes pedigree. Okay, so everybody, we're kind of running out of time a little bit, so I want to kind of recollect our thoughts and kind of see what conclusions we've reached. So it seems like the general consensus, but obviously we each kind of had our own opinions, but it's that we want people who create the things to have the things
that is definitely
to control over it.
That's the main thing we all agree on.
Was the people who created them.
Right. The original author needs to be able to profit from their own intellectual property.
Correct.
We're less clear on whether they can transfer it.
Yes. Yeah, the transference, what happens when they pass, even while they're alive, the idea, can everybody make this? Can only certain people make this? So I guess that's the thing about it. I know definitely that's going to be my thing to think and meditate on, is that I always approached it of the, well, I'm the corporation and I wouldn't want to lose my things to the, you know, as a creator and consumer, you know, I'd rather the Wild West. I know we also joked of the whole, like, was the marketplace of ideas. And I feel like in a political space, that's a really effed up thing. But I feel like in here, it's just the marketplace of SpongeBob knockoffs. I feel like that's a lot more interesting, and YouTube has already shown us a glimpse of such a thing. Of such a marvel, of such a wonder. So, yeah. Any other closing thoughts before we do the old wrap up?
None that won't turn into another podcast.
Save that for next time.
Eat the rich.
Yeah. Eat the rich and then make all the things they were making better.
Yeah.
I can dig it.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thanks for joining us today on Pop Culture Talk Zone. I've been Kermit the Grog. You can find me here on this podcast stream on Ramble Rousers on wherever you get your podcasts. And also sometimes you can find me on the Keeping Friendship Magic YouTube page. That's where I'm at. Brad, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm Brad, a.k.a. Isekai Sensei-sama.
If you're watching the video version, you can see how his eyebrows went down when he said that, when he was glaring at me. The joys of visuals.
We're going to be recording our anime-specific podcast in a couple weeks, probably.
Fingers crossed.
If you have isekai questions, or really anything related to anime, I guess, you can email at isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. And then
ask once... your parents for spelling help.
Did you not put it in the description?
What? I mean, I did, but sometimes people don't look at it like that.
Look at the description. And so, yeah, we're going to put that out in a little while. That should be fun. That's pretty much everywhere I'm at right now. Maybe that'll change.
We can find you here in the meantime.
Yes.
I just have this thought that you didn't go to Isekai Medical School for 4 years to be called Brad.
Four?
That's way better than me just doing the Mr. Joe.
Oh, gosh.
He's been in the time chamber. He's got way more than 4 years. Even if it hasn't been 4 years, he's been reading.
Several lifetimes.
Do you know how expensive Isekai school is?
Oh, it costs an arm and a leg.
Ben, where can people find you?
I'm going to look directly at the camera. I don't know if that's going to work, but I host a book podcast called Words About Books, where I have also ranted about copyright for a long time.
Specifically so. Dune.
Yeah, if you just need more of that. Check out Words About Books. You can find me on Twitter at WABpod. You can get Words About Books wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, plug your streaming.
Oh, God. Yeah. And I stream on Twitch every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is at twitch.tv/wordsaboutbooks.
Ooh.
All one word.
Have to check that out sometime. Well,
you better get comfortable with the camera.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us today for another Pop Culture Talk Zone. I do not have an outro on these things, so I guess it's the, it's my normal thing is, you know, when you're taking in media, think about it, you know, think about it a little bit.
Yes, introspection.
Introspection, that's how you can grow as a person, reach new ideas. Now that I've processed it with these wonderful opinions from these wonderful friends of mine and thoughts and ideas, I now look at this topic of copyright a little bit differently, and I think I'm a lot better of a person for having these new ideas presented to me that I can mold into whatever I go to next. So with that, that is me, Kermit.
That's me, Brad.
That is me, Ben.
Signing off. Goodbye, everybody. Bye. Bye-bye. Goodbye, Jojo.
Oh. Ahoy hoy, friends! Thanks for listening to the show! And if you want more of that wonderful content of the stuff that I produce with my friends, subscribe to Ramble Rousers wherever you get your podcasts. If you're looking for more good podcasts, come check out our sister shows, Keeping Friendship Magic, and Words About Books. Ah, incredible. And remember for next time, please be quiet when we're recording. Catch you next time.
Experiencing technical difficulties with people up in the hallway.
That was spooky. I thought there was a ghost.
Only we're allowed to be loud.
Right?
Yeah.